This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Lawrence Silberman, a retired judge nominated by the Bush administration as the co-chairman of the commission investigating pre-war intelligence on Iraq, was involved in a major cover-up during the Reagan era, his critics alleged yesterday. Mr. Silberman sat on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review, which approved the expanded surveillance powers for the Justice Department under the controversial Patriot Act. George W. Bush named him as the senior Republican on a 9-member bipartisan commission examining how and why U.S. intelligence had been so wrong about Saddam Hussein's alleged weapons of mass destruction. It will report next spring, well after the November elections. The Defense Department has requested that George W. Bush's payroll records from his service in the National Guard be sent to Washington from a DOD archive in Colorado to ascertain whether they can be released to news organizations and public interest groups that have formally requested them in recent days. Bush, in an interview shown Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press, said he would release all his records, including pay stubs, to put to rest suggestions that he may not have fulfilled his duty near the end of his Guard service. The other documents that should still be available are Bush's payroll records, which would show what drills Bush was compensated for during that period. Officials said yesterday that the DOD in Washington would review the master copy of Bush's payroll records, which have been stored on microfiche for 30 years at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service in Denver. George W. Bush's press secretary and a former White House press aide testified on Friday to a federal grand jury investigating who improperly disclosed the identity of a CIA agent. The appearances of the press secretary Scott McClellan and the press aide Adam Levine reflected what lawyers in the case said was the quickening pace of a criminal inquiry in which a special prosecutor is examining conversations between journalists and the White House. One set of documents that prosecutors repeatedly referred to in their meetings with White House aides are extensive notes compiled by Louis Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff and national security advisor. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
The WhiteHouse.com website is getting out of the pornography business. Its owner says he's worried what his preschool-aged son might think. The owner said he doesn't know yet how much the sale will fetch. He claimed the WhiteHouse.com site, which advertises pictures of hot interns, earns more than $1 million each year in revenues and said he's invested more than $7 million since 1997. The site currently features a picture of Democratic frontrunner John Kerry with the message, "Our candidates are better looking." For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
George Pinocchio Bush was at it again in his latest State of the Union peroration, and his biggest lie was not about weapons of mass destruction. Bush tried in his speech to diffuse the growing anxiety and anger about the loss of middle-class jobs by making the bald-faced assertion that the solution is simple: more job training. Millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans must have stared in slack-jawed disbelief as this son of privilege mouthed the corporate line that everything is okay with our economy if only the workers would get more training and improve their skills. Training for what? Here came George's whopper. Much of our job growth will be found in high-skilled fields. That's a lie, and Bush knows it. Well, okay, he's clueless about real life, so he probably doesn't know it, but his speechwriters do. Bush's own Labor Department reports that of the 30 occupations that will account for the highest job growth between now and 2010, two-thirds require minimal skills. Yes, high-tech companies will create 284,000 more jobs for computer software engineers in that period, but many more jobs than that will be created in each of these very low-tech fields: freight movers, home health aides, janitors, waitresses, security guards, office clerks, and cashiers. The number one job creator for America's future? Restaurant workers, including fast food. You don't need a high-tech degree, you need a hairnet. And all of these jobs pay pitiful wages. By the way, for the past 3 years, Bush has cut the job training budget. And forget about those software engineering jobs. Companies are now shipping them off to India, Russia, and other low-wage countries. This is Jim Hightower saying, training doesn't create jobs, and low-wage jobs don't create a middle class. America needs a living wage, labor law reform, an end to subsidies for corporations that ship our good jobs out, and a president who has a clue.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, peace, freedom, and justice from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Boy, you have to think back all the way to 1798 to get how long this thing has been recycling. Where I'm going with this, I'll give you the headline first and then we'll fill it in a little bit. John Ashcroft has just subpoenaed the medical records of 40 women who received abortions at a hospital in Chicago. At the same time, there's a group, the National Lawyers Guild has been subpoenaed by the same Justice Department to turn over all the records of who showed up for their meetings. This is people think this is something new. First, or they think, well, it's a return of McCarthyism, and of course it is. But it also goes, this is something that goes back to the founding of America. This is the fundamental argument, the fundamental debate between the Hamiltonian elitist worldview, the worldview that says there should be a ruling class and orders, as Russell Kirk said in 1953 in his book, The Conservative Mind. The core concept of the conservative worldview, that humans are fundamentally evil and we have to control them, versus the worldview that the most of the founders of the United States held, which was based on John Locke, John Locke's writings in the early 1700s, his second treatise on government, for example, from which Thomas Jefferson lifted the phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Actually, John Locke said life, liberty, and the protection of property. And the founders came to the conclusion that property was important, and they ultimately built that into the Constitution. But they felt that the pursuit of happiness, the pursuit of freedom, the ability to live in a world free of fear, was a more important function of government, even than protecting property. And you see that just clearly in the preamble to the Constitution. So back in the second president of the United States, John Adams, in 1798, passed a series of laws that came to be known as the Alien and Sedition Acts, not unlike the Patriot Act. I mean, this was like the first iteration of this. And immediately John Adams threw 20 of his opponents, most of them editors of newspapers, into prison for speaking out against him. A guy got thrown into jail for making a comment, a drunken comment in a bar as Adams' parade was going by. Benjamin Franklin Bach, the grandson of Benjamin Franklin, was thrown into prison for calling John Adams old, querulous, toothless, and bald. So we see these cycles. During the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln suspended habeas corpus and many other civil liberties. During World War I, we had a suspension of some civil liberties. During World War II, certainly, the same thing happened. And Joe McCarthy wanted to see it happen again. And here we are again. When are we going to learn that you don't protect democracy by destroying democracy? Here, this from Chicago Business Daily. This article by Mark Taylor. A move by U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft to subpoena the medical records of 40 patients who received so-called partial birth abortions at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago was halted at least temporarily when a Chicago federal judge quashed the information request. So we've got our Justice Department is being moderated. This is one of the reasons why these judiciary nominations are so important. A federal judge, one of those judges that has to be approved by the Senate, said, hold on, Ashcroft, I'm not sure that you can look at the private medical records of patients. We're moving in the direction of throwing women in prison for having had abortions. The ruling is the first in a series of subpoenas by the U.S. Justice Department, writes Crane's Chicago Business Newsroom. Seeking the medical records of patients from 7 physicians and at least 5 hospitals. Mr. Ashcroft is seeking patient records from University of Michigan Hospitals and Health Centers in Ann Arbor, Hahnemann University Hospital in Philadelphia, Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center and Weill Cornell Medical Center in New York, and an unidentified San Francisco area hospital. They're looking at the patients of a doctor by the name of Hammond, among others. Hammond is one of 7 doctors and 3 groups who has challenged the constitutionality of the Partial Birth Abortion Act ban of 2003. This is the law that said that essentially even if a woman will die from carrying a child to full term, that child cannot be aborted. Now, I realize this is a hot topic. People have a lot of strong feelings on it. To be going after the patients. Now, the American Civil Liberties Union, this is one of the doctors who challenged this law in court, and now they're going after his patients. You get it? This is the administration that plays hardball. This is the administration that seeks revenge. This is the administration, our quote for the day from George W. Bush, first of all.
If it feels good, do it. And if you got a problem, blame it on somebody else.
Yeah, well, sort of contradicting the... we'll come back to that a little later. This is very strange. The American Civil Liberties Union is representing the National Abortion Federation, Planned Parenthood, and the Center for Reproductive Rights, and they've all filed challenges to the law. Hearing for all of the challenges has been scheduled for March 29th in the U.S. District Court. So as soon as these guys stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, we don't think this law is constitutional. You've passed a law that says that if a woman's life is in danger, the fetus's life holds priority. And we don't think that that's right. And they challenge this in court. And what happens? The Justice Department goes in with subpoenas to get the medical records of their patients. Now, on another front, similar kind of bullying by this administration. This is an Associated Press story out of Des Moines, Iowa. A federal judge has ordered a university to turn over records about a gathering of anti-war activists. In addition to the subpoena of Drake University, subpoenas were served this past week on 4 of the activists who attended a November 15th forum at the school, ordering them to appear before a grand jury. Now, grand juries are kind of unique. If you refuse to testify before a grand jury, And there are some of us who think the grand juries themselves are unconstitutional. But, you know, that was decided some time ago by the Supreme Court. But I still have real problems with the whole idea of a grand jury. But nonetheless, if you refuse to you cannot invoke your Fifth Amendment rights before a grand jury, except under very, very, very limited circumstances. It's very intimidating. You can be put in prison until you speak. And if you don't tell the truth, that's it. You're nailed. Well, of course, you get that if you're under oath, but this is a situation where you can be compelled to testify against yourself. In addition to records about who attended the forum, the subpoena orders the university to divulge all records relating to the local chapter of the National Lawyers Guild that sponsored the forum. Now, let me just explain what happened here. There was a meeting that the National Lawyers Guild helped put together before a protest against the war in Iraq. This is just a very straightforward, you know, a protest against the war in Iraq. And one of the people who attended this training, and it was a training in nonviolent techniques of protest, one of the persons who attended it has been charged with the crime, of assaulting a peace officer. She was a Grinnell College librarian. And she's pleaded innocent, saying she simply went limp and thereby resisted arrest. And what the Justice Department is saying is going limp constitutes assault against a police officer. And because that is a crime, we can go after the people who conspired with you to commit this crime. That is, the people that you had a meeting with, the anti-war group. And we can go after them individually. This is exactly what people feared would happen, said Brian Terrell of the Peace Ministry, one of those subpoenaed. The civil liberties of everyone in this country are in danger. This forum, this was just an Iowa thing. It was titled, Stop the Occupation, Bring the Iowa Guard Home. This should be protected political speech. He said this case brings back fears of the Red Squads of the 1950s and campus clampdowns on Vietnam War protesters. And to make it even more bizarre, I mean, this little bit has leaked out, this little bit of the story. Lawyers Guild President Michael Ayers, for example, said the law is clear that the use of the grand jury to investigate protected political activities or to intimidate protesters exceeds its authority. That's an understatement, said by a lawyer here. Representatives of the Lawyers Guild and the American Civil Liberties Union said they had not heard of such a subpoena being used at any university in decades. The last time this sort of thing happened was Joe McCarthy era. And to make it even more bizarre, a judge has issued a gag order forbidding school officials from discussing the subpoena. So they can't even talk about it. What's happening in America? What is happening to the United States of America? We have a president who says, you got to remember, I'm a war president. This is ruling by fear and intimidation. Yeah, I would like my country back. I would like a nation in which the world sees as a beacon of liberty and holds up to everybody, to each other. The protesters in Tiananmen Square in 89, as I recall, carried a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of the Statue of Liberty. They called her the Goddess of Democracy. Many of them marched to their death, quoting Thomas Jefferson. The founders fought and died for a nation in which people could speak out, and not just speak out on any topic they wanted, but in particular, speak out against policies of their government with which they disagree. That was one of the foundational bases of the Revolutionary War. And here we have now a government that during the run-up to the war in Iraq was playing the same game John Adams was. You know, one of the reasons why these whitewashed biographies of John Adams are doing so well among Republicans, they want to bring back these days, doing the same thing that John Adams did, which was to say, if you criticize the president, you are criticizing the government. And you will find over and over and over again Republicans referring to the president as the government. And it ain't the case. They're two separate things. It is appropriate, as Teddy Roosevelt said, it is patriotic to question our elected officials. This is Tom Hartman, 20 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like a...
Okay, up there.
You'll sleep like
Need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious, connoisseurs love them, and they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions, and we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you, people who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal.
Anaconda. Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Huh. That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds, snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world shut its own.
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We got a Berlusconi alert coming up in just a moment here. Shar tells me we have a caller on the line. Hey, Shar, can you tell you who, where, what? Welcome to the Tom. Oh, Chris from New Mexico. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I was just finishing watching a taped version of the Tim Russert interview with Ho-Ho the Sock Puppet, and something struck me. It was interesting. You know, my favorite George Bush quote is the same one that Republicans either forget or pretend never happened. And the quote is, there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and what happened on September 11th. He spent virtually that entire interview trying to force a connection there. Did you notice that? You know, we were attacked. We had to respond.
They've been doing that from day one.
Well, yeah. It's like they make a policy statement, and then they just completely forget about it. And Bush kept bringing up the word context. And then he would bring up the same old arguments, historical arguments, pointing out that Saddam Hussein was a blood-drenched monster, which, of course, he was. But he would do it without historic context, you know. He gassed his own people. They never point out that when that happened in that time period, the United States was actually giving Saddam Hussein the use of our military satellites to use in the war against Iran.
And sold him the precursor chemicals to make the gas.
The mass graves, they don't point out that over 85% of those mass graves were filled immediately following the 91 Gulf War, when Bush Sr. told the Shias to rise up, you know, we'll help you do away with Saddam Hussein. And, of course,
and
we just left them hanging, and they got slaughtered.
The problem here, is it Chris? Was
yes.
It Chris? Yeah. The problem, Chris, is that, you know, the awful conundrum is pointing that kind of stuff out almost sounds
as
like
if you're
somebody's
anti-American.
You're defending Saddam Hussein, who was the reality, you know, it certainly is, number one, it's the reality of the situation. And number two, there are, you know, I mean, if you want to go looking for madmen around the world or people who have weapons of mass destruction, Hussein was way down the list, even given the so-called intelligence. But what constantly evades those who are inquiring about this, and evaded Tim Russer for that matter, is that Iraq is sitting on 10% of the world's oil.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And here you got the CEO of an oil company as president, you got the CEO of an oil company as vice president, you got Condoleezza Rice, who's got a tanker named after her from when she used to work at ExxonMobil. Wake up, America!
Well, you know, and it should be pointed out, Bush made a very, very big show of saying anybody who assists terrorist nations in acquiring weapons of mass destruction is our enemy. I'm wondering if Musharraf is feeling a little uncomfortable right about now, considering his national hero did just that.
Yeah, well, yes and no. Musharraf knows that he's secure. He's our guy. He's the, you know, I mean, he wasn't even elected. I mean, you know, the guy who was a military coup. He may be a dictator, but he's our dictator, just like Saddam was back in the 80s.
Just like Saddam was our blood-drenched monster. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the danger of these kinds of policies. It's really time for us to step back and say, wait a minute. And in fact, I think we should be doing this in the United Nations, stepping back and saying, we support democracy. And those nations, for example, I believe that those nations in the United Nations that don't allow their people to vote for their leaders shouldn't have a vote in the UN. Now, I realize it's a pretty bizarre, you know, pretty strong position, but I really think that that's the case. We need to be looking at democracy first and foremost, not just who's our buddy. Chris, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People often underestimate the power of nature. That mistake can cost them their lives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. An avalanche, a rushing river, and an ocean rip current have this much in common. They're among the forces of nature that people often underestimate. That can mean serious injury or death during outdoor recreation activities. Lawrence Gonzalez is the author of a new book called Deep Survival: Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why.
One of the things that I've learned in researching deep survival is we don't really learn things that we don't have direct physical experience of. The abstract learning that we get, even if somebody tells you, hey, don't go over there, that's dangerous, you may go over there because you've never actually experienced the force.
Gonzalez says it's a common mistake, one that leads us to underestimate the energy of natural systems.
A typical example of this is kids come to a stream, decide to wade across it, and they just don't appreciate how heavy and powerful water is. And they get in water that should be, they think, wadeable, up to their knees maybe, and they're swept away. We just really don't appreciate how powerful some of these natural forces can be.
Gonzalez says people not only misjudge the forces of nature, they overestimate their own abilities.
An avalanche is a good example. Lots of skiers say that they could outrun an avalanche, and they're wrong. An avalanche can travel at as much as 150 miles an hour.
Deep Survival describes a variety of outdoor accidents where miscalculation cost people their lives. Gonzalez says it's important to accurately assess the forces you'll encounter during any kind of expedition, and he says you should also be humble and accept that nature is more powerful than you. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You don't know what's going on. You've been away for far too long. You can't come back and think you are still mad.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we are finding out what's going on. Turns out George Bush on his little interview there the other day with Tim Russert says, oh, yeah, we'll open all of them. All my records are public. Salon.com, interesting article. Bush's records still AWOL. In fact, there is no indication that Bush has ever authorized that all his military records, including those considered personal under provisions of the Privacy Act, be made public. Now, this is something that Wesley Clark has actually done. In fact, he had a room where he had all these people come in and say, hey, come on, take a look at this stuff. I mean, he had set it up. 34 years with their military records. They called it the Clark Reading Room, you know, sort of like the Christian Science Reading Room. Here's the Clark Reading Room where you can read, and it was in the Manchester Hotel in New Hampshire, where you could read all of his military records. I mean, every single thing that ever happened with Wesley Clark. But Bush's military records have never been released to the general public, nor have any disciplinary reviews, pay stubs, tax records, or personal letters which would help determine his exact whereabouts in 72, 73. See, those, apparently a couple have just, you know, some of the folks in the chat room tell me that just a couple of records were conveniently released today. These might be being released by Bush himself rather than under a Freedom of Information Act filing. Because what you have to do is you have to fill out a form. It's a very simple form. It's under the Freedom of Information and Privacy Act. You have to authorize their release. And the form says, and here's the exact language, I authorize the National Personnel Records Center or other custodian of my military service record to release to, and then you fill in the name of any news organization, the following information and or copies of documents from my military service record, period. It's all it has to say. And you sign that. And your records will become public. And George Bush has never done that. And he told Russert, and he told the American people that he had. But the fact is that he hadn't. The White House has yet to announce whether Bush will sign an authorization notice, and if so, when the documents will be made available to the press. This is an issue that I suspect, particularly given that it looks like John Kerry may well be the Democratic nominee for president. This snowball down the hill effect is picking up steam, and you know, as much as I see the deficiencies of Kerry, I see the strengths of Kerry. You could see that with any of the candidates, and we can pick on any of them, and we can congratulate any. I mean, all of the Democratic candidates, without exception, have tremendous things to offer. Beyond George Bush, I'd say with the possible exception of Al Sharpton, and I used to think he was an okay guy until I discovered that his campaign has been funded by, and he's been largely counseled by, this Stone guy, this Republican, who has worked on Bush's campaigns and was the guy who was feeding Al Sharpton the anti-Dean information back when Dean was the front runner, trying to help Sharpton bring this guy down. So it's amazing the Republican participation. Some would say manipulation in the Democratic primaries. But anyhow, we have this this situation where George Bush is, you know, he said, Tim Russert said, will you release your records? And he said, absolutely. And then he added, we did so in 2000, by the way. Wrong! Sorry, George. It ain't the case. It ain't the case. And this is not going to go away. Particularly if it's John Kerry who's the candidate. You've got a decorated Vietnam hero who actually showed up for service. And what's this? Oh, I got out a few months early so that I could go to Harvard Business School. I know a lot of veterans who would have been very happy if they could have said, well, why don't you just let me out a few months early? I'd like to go to college. But their daddy wasn't a congressman and an agent in the Central Intelligence Agency at the time, like George Bush's father was. Anyhow, it's time for a Berlusconi alert. Yes, indeed, Silvio Berlusconi. People, I got an email from somebody the other day going, "Why do you keep talking about Berlusconi?" Well, this music is the national anthem of Italy. The reason why is because it's a cautionary tale to Americans. This is something that we all need to know about. Fascism didn't start in Germany. It started in Italy. And Berlusconi, a great fan of Mussolini, has reincarnated this and is doing it in a way that, in my opinion, we are very close to seeing replicated in the United States and the United Kingdom. Here's this guy who was a small businessman and a small-time crook, apparently. His business partner was just convicted of bribery and sent to prison, and he himself, Berlusconi, is under indictment for bribing a judge. But anyhow, years ago, he started out, he bought a television station, bought a radio station, bought a newspaper, bought another TV station, bought a TV network. Pretty soon he owned 90% of the media in Italy. Not 90% of the media, but 90% of the media, of total people's media exposure. I mean, there's a lot of little fringe newspapers and newsletters and things that he didn't own, but 90% of what the people of Italy saw, heard, or read came from corporations owned by Berlusconi in one way or another, or owned by associates of his as extensions of his little song and dance. And once he had that kind of control over the nation, he ran for political office. Well, he created this party. He created a whole brand new party. And guess what? They won. And people look at faux news, for example, and Rupert Murdoch's overt conservative agenda. Conservative in the context of anti-democracy. The classic conservative notion that a society should have orders and classes and castes, as defined by Russell Kirk back in 1953, as defined by John Adams in 1790, as defined by Alexander Hamilton. You know, the classic conservative notion that some are born to rule and the rest of us are born to lead. The classic conservative notion that the wealth is a sign of divine blessing. The Calvinistic notion, I mean, it still infiltrates much of the Christian right in America, and it certainly was the core, not just the Christian right, it still infiltrates much of the conservative ethos in America, the whole mind view that if somebody is doing really well financially, it's not because they were born into a rich family, it's not because they had opportunities that others didn't have, it's not because of the color of their skin, no, it's because God blessed them. Now, I don't mean to diminish the blessing of God, but, you know, this is not, well, for example, for those who proclaim Christianity as a basis for this, this is not what Jesus said. In fact, he said the opposite. Yeah, read the Sermon on the Mount. Go back to Matthew 5, 6, and 7. But anyhow, here we are, Berlusconi. He acquires all the media. He runs for office. His party takes power. And here in today's Financial Times, tens of thousands of Italian and what's happening is it's falling apart. The conservative vision that Berlusconi has brought to Italy, that the conservatives in America would bring to the United States, Italy is just, you know, maybe 5 years ahead of us in bringing about, you know, absolute control of the media by a single party point of view, absolute control of the government, suppression of free speech. But now, some would say, just as is happening with the Democratic Party, people are fighting back. And here we are. Tens of thousands of Italian doctors and other public sector health workers staged a one-day strike yesterday in the latest outbreak of labor unrest to rock the government of Silvio Berlusconi. It was the first occasion on which all 42 trade unions representing health workers had gone on strike simultaneously and coincided with a pilot stoppage that forced the cancellation of 159 flights by Alitalia. And they go on in this article to note that the longer this government, Berlusconi's government, has held power, the deeper it has sunk into legislative difficulties. See, the problem is, because the conservative vision is so inconsistent with democracy. And in fact, they'll go out of their way to say, you know, you don't want democracy. You can't have democracy. You have democracy, people will vote themselves all those tax dollars, and they'll give themselves welfare and this and that and the other. I'm sorry, history does not show that. What history shows is that in a democracy, people will be willing to pay out of their own pockets for a certain threshold of quality of life. Universal health care, for example, in every democracy in the world except the United States, all the industrialized democracies. Costa Rica has universal health care. A military that will defend the nation, police departments, fire departments. Is this socialism to have a fire department? Is it socialism to have your roads paved? To have public education? No. This is what what is referred to all around the world as liberal democracy. And it's still in textbooks. The United States is still referred to as a liberal democracy, a phrase that goes back to the 1700s. And it is the exact opposite of the conservative worldview. The conservative worldview is, no, you have to protect people from themselves by control, by getting any of the mechanism of we the people protecting ourselves out of the way, so that those of us who know better, those of us who run the largest corporations, who will control your health care, who will control your pensions and your future, who will control what you read and hear and see in the newspapers, we can make all the decisions, don't worry. We, through the mechanism of what we call the free market, will make sure that you know what you have to know. That's the message of the conservatives. And it is antithetical to democracy. Democracy requires a substrate, a basis, a grounding upon which the market exists. It requires a government to provide stable currency. It requires a government to provide a system of laws by which contracts can be enforced. You can't have business without this. And yet it has to be paid for. How do you pay for it? By taxes. And yet increasingly we're having corporations paying less and less of the tax load in the United States, more and more of it falling on the poor and the middle class, in the most regressive forms of taxes. Things like sales taxes and the payroll tax that you only pay on the first $81,500 of income. You make more than $81,000, you don't pay payroll tax on the rest of that money. Nobody talks about that, at least none of the conservatives. They don't want to talk about it. You won't find that one on Rush Limbaugh's website. No, it's the income tax, which people pay no matter how much they make, that the conservatives are all upset about. But what you find is that the lowest quintile of Americans, the lowest fifth of Americans in terms of income, are paying a higher percentage of their total income in taxes than the richest. In total taxes. Now, not in income tax. See, this is the games that these guys play with these words.
No, those people don't even pay income taxes.
And then George Bush went to the point of actually saying, oh, they don't even pay taxes. No, I'm sorry, they do. Sales taxes, payroll taxes. On and on and on. Anyhow, let me end that rant and move on through the news here. This article from Reuters, I think this is interesting. The Afghan opium poppy harvest this year is 3,600 tons. That's up 6% over the previous year. And Afghanistan represents 2/3 of the world's opium production. We have done a very fine job of subsidizing the this is just an absolute mess we've got there. What are we doing about it? Nothing. I want to read you this letter from Richard Devoren. It's a letter that he wrote to President Bush, and it speaks for itself. I think it's appropriate that this. You know, he wrote this hoping it would get distributed. I want to share this with you. He said, "Dear President Bush, with heavy heart, tears in my eyes, and a home full of sorrow, I pick up my pen to write to you about a brave soldier, Second Lieutenant Seth J. Devoren, U.S. Army. My son was killed in Iraq on February 3, 2004, fighting in a war. Seth was a good boy, well-mannered, smart, kind, and understanding. He joined the Army in an effort to serve his country. And serve his country he did. Seth made the ultimate sacrifice. Burying a child will no doubt be the hardest task that his mother and I shall ever have to do. The one question I have and the one question I would like you to answer is, sir, why did my son and every other soldier that was killed, maimed, and wounded have to suffer for settling your vendetta? My son is gone just when he was laying a strong foundation to build upon for the rest of his life. Now, President Bush, his life has been snuffed out in a meaningless war. Where are all the weapons of mass destruction? Where are the stockpiles of chemicals and biological weapons? Please, President, pray for all our fallen heroes, and as a tribute to these heroes, get our boys and girls out of Iraq now before too much more blood is shed. Since you waged this unnecessary war on Saddam Hussein, the world has become a horrible place to live in. I know my boy is safe now in a world free of hate and prejudices where God is his president. But you tell me, President Bush, why he had to go so soon and in such a violent way. Respectfully yours, Richard M. DeVoren. And then we have, here we have Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld saying, well, I'll share these with you right after the break. This, the Rumsfeld, what he's saying and what he said in the context of this letter is just such a shock. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be back right after this.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
An email here from Jamie. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Jamie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature, one word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh? You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, broadcasting live from the Winter Brain Conference, brainmeeting.com. This is our last day here at this extraordinary event put on by Rob Call, who also publishes opednews.com, one of the great news sources on the Internet. We'll be talking to Rob in the third hour of our program. And here we are in Palm Springs, California. Tomorrow, Rama Schneider will be filling in for me as I'm flying home the strange vagaries of trying to get from anywhere on Earth to Vermont. You end up with these strange airline schedules. Anyhow, I wanted to share with you Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Here, a few days ago, he says, and I quote, I never said imminent threat, and I don't know anyone who did say imminent threat. And there are a lot of people running around saying that word, but it was not used by the people in the administration, except I'm told by one assistant press officer who used it. End quote. This is February 6th, 04, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. That the claim. Here are the facts. On September 18th, Donald Rumsfeld said, and I quote, some have argued that the nuclear threat from Iraq is not imminent, that Saddam is at least 5 to 7 years away from having nuclear weapons. I would not be so certain, and we should be just as certain and concerned about the immediate threat from biological weapons. Iraq also has these weapons. Here's a quote from Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, November 14th. I would look you in the eye and I would say, go back before September 11 and ask this question. Was the attack that took place on September 11 an imminent threat the month before, 2 months before, 3 months before, 6 months before? When did the attack on September 11 become an imminent threat? Now transport yourself forward a year, 2 years, a week, or a month. So the question is, when is it such an immediate threat that you must do something? End quote. Here is a quote from Scott McClellan, the official White House spokesman, not some assistant press officer. This is the official White House spokesman. Quote, this from February 10th, 03. Quote, this is about an imminent threat. End quote. On January 26th, White House Communication Director Dan Bartlett was asked, is Saddam an imminent threat to U.S. interests? His answer, well, of course he is. Ari Fleischer asked whether Iraq was an imminent threat to the United States. Absolutely, he said, on May 7th of 03. Nothing but double talk coming out of this administration. Time for a change, my friends. It's happening in November. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
The Defense Department has requested that George W. Bush's payroll records from his service in the National Guard be sent to Washington from a DOD archive in Colorado to ascertain whether they can be released to news organizations and public interest groups that have formally requested them in recent days. Bush, in an interview shown Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press, said he would release all his records, including pay stubs, to put to rest suggestions that he may not have fulfilled his duty near the end of his Guard service. The other documents that should still be available are Bush's payroll records, which would show what drills Bush was compensated for during that period. Officials said yesterday that the DOD in Washington would review the master copy of Bush's payroll records, which have been stored on microfiche for 30 years at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service in Denver. George W. Bush's press secretary and a former White House press aide testified on Friday to a federal grand jury investigating who improperly disclosed the identity of a CIA agent. The appearances of the press secretary, Scott McClellan, and the press aide, Adam Levine, reflected what lawyers in the case said was the quickening pace of a criminal inquiry in which a special prosecutor is examining conversations between journalists and the White House. One set of documents that prosecutors repeatedly referred to in their meetings with White House aides are extensive notes compiled by Louis Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff and national security advisor. A move by U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft to subpoena the medical records of 40 patients who received so-called partial birth abortions at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago was halted, at least temporarily, when a Chicago federal judge quashed the information request. U.S. Chief District Judge Charles Kokoras denied the government's request to obtain patient medical records from Northwestern, citing the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996 and Illinois Medical Privacy Law. Northwestern received the subpoena in December, a month after obstetrician-gynecologist Cassie Hammond, a member of Northwestern's staff and medical school faculty, was served with subpoenas seeking his patient records. The American Civil Liberties Union is representing the National Abortion Federation, Planned Parenthood, and the Center for Reproductive Rights, which are all filing challenges to the law. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country, with a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities. It's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
Elko, Nevada police arrested Roger Gray, 25, on the basis of yellow snow he left after relieving himself on the rooftop of a restaurant that had been burglarized. Investigators said the evidence produced enough DNA to link Gray to the scene. He subsequently admitted a jewelry store burglary, police said. He was booked Friday for investigation of burglary. Bail was set at $5,000.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
George Pinocchio Bush was at it again in his latest State of the Union peroration, and his biggest lie was not about weapons of mass destruction. Bush tried in his speech to diffuse the growing anxiety and anger about the loss of middle-class jobs by making the bald-faced assertion that the solution is simple: more job training. Millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans must have stared in slack-jawed disbelief as this son of privilege mouthed the corporate line that everything is okay with our economy if only the workers would get more training and improve their skills. Training for what? Here came George's whopper. Much of our job growth will be found in high-skilled fields. That's a lie, and Bush knows it. Well, okay, he's clueless about real life, so he probably doesn't know it, but his speechwriters do. Bush's own Labor Department reports that of the 30 occupations that will account for the highest job growth between now and 2010, two-thirds require minimal skills. Yes, high-tech companies will create 284,000 more jobs for computer software engineers in that period, but many more jobs than that will be created in each of these very low-tech fields: freight movers, home health aides, janitors, waitresses, security guards, office clerks, and cashiers. The number one job creator for America's future? Restaurant workers, including fast food. You don't need a high-tech degree, you need a hairnet. And all of these jobs pay pitiful wages. By the way, for the past 3 years, Bush has cut the job training budget. And forget about those software engineering jobs. Companies are now shipping them off to India, Russia, and other low-wage countries. This is Jim Hightower saying, training doesn't create jobs, and low-wage jobs don't create a middle class. America needs a living wage, labor law reform, an end to subsidies for corporations that ship our good jobs out, and a president who has a clue.
Another audio clip from the production meeting.
Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from the Winter Brain Conference in Palm Springs, California. Why, you know, I live in Vermont, and we normally broadcast this program from Vermont, and we lived there through the great civil unions wars. When the Vermont Supreme Court came along and said, they looked back at the Constitution of Vermont, which was written back when Vermont was still an independent nation. Vermont and Texas being the only two states that were nations before they joined the United States. And they read the Constitution, and it doesn't say anything about people having to be of opposite genders if they're going to engage basically in what we would call marriage. And so the Supreme Court said, you guys got to do something about this, because there was a lawsuit before the Supreme Court of Vermont that claimed illegal discrimination. Two women who wanted to get married, and they said, you know, this is illegal discrimination. And it was a wrenching thing for the state, because the issue was so exploited by the right. And one of the things that I find really interesting, one of the reasons why I think this is more than just an issue about civil unions and civil rights, although that's very important, but right at this moment I think it's relevant, is that if you surf around the Internet and you look at all the right-wing websites and you see the arguments that are being marshaled, that are going to be trotted out in the elections coming up in November, so many of them have to do with the fact that the Massachusetts Supreme Court just said that according to the Constitution of Massachusetts, again, looking back a couple of hundred years ago, that they didn't say you have to be a man and a woman to be married either.
And now my position on this up until relatively recently had been that of the Vermont took, which was basically the state will, you know, allow a contract, which is a civil union, which is the equivalent of marriage, but marriage is something that churches sanctify, and therefore it should be up to the churches. But the reality, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think, A, that's sort of a cop-out, and B, the reality is that the word marriage is used in state law. So, I mean, let's just get real here. Now, in the midst of this comes David Motz, I believe it's pronounced, the author of Civil Wars, A Battle for Gay Marriage, a book about these topics and this battle. And I'm very pleased to have David on our program today. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Happy to be with you.
David, it's Motz, right?
Motz, yes.
M-O-A-T-S. Great.
Right.
Frame this thing for us, first of all. What happened in Massachusetts?
What happened in Massachusetts was that seven couples brought a lawsuit seeking the right to marry. The case was somewhat different than the case in Vermont. The case in Massachusetts was based largely on the right to privacy and the right to freedom to make to make choices about our private life, about our intimate relationships and so on. And so the court came out for gay marriage. And just last week, the court clarified and said that civil unions would not be sufficient under the Massachusetts Constitution. In Vermont, based on the Vermont Constitution, the court came to a different view. They're basing it on a part of the Vermont Constitution called the Common Benefits Clause, which holds that the government is instituted for the benefit of everyone and not for the benefit of any particular group. So
right.
the court found that limiting the benefits of marriage to heterosexuals was not fair, and they gave to the legislature the choice of whether to provide gay marriage or something like gay marriage, and the legislature chose civil union.
Right. Now it seems to me that that's a stronger argument, frankly. Not that I'm opposed to either one, but then the privacy argument, because the privacy argument is being put forward in the context of a legal contract in which the state is involved.
The state gives recognition to your marriage, but
Not just recognition. They enforce all sorts of provisions associated with it, from child custody to wealth division to divorce. And, I mean, the state is very involved in marriage.
That's right. And the Freedom to Marry advocates point out that the court has also found that marriage is a fundamental right in a number of cases with heterosexual couples. The court has found that the state can interfere with the right to marriage only with for a very good reason. And in this case, they found that gender was not a good enough reason.
Yeah, this brings us back to the Ninth Amendment to the Constitution, which, you know, it's like in what was it, 1954 in the Connecticut case against birth control, you know, where birth control used to be illegal in Connecticut, and I think it was 54. I don't remember the name of the case, where the dissenting, you know, where birth control was finally legalized in the United States, and was it Potter? One of the dissenting justices said, "I find no right to privacy in the Constitution." And Justice Thomas, now in the Texas sodomy case, just quoted him and said the same thing. And of course, the Constitution wasn't put into place to define our rights, and the Bill of Rights specifically says in the Ninth Amendment that all of the rights that that people have are not just limited to the eight that preceded this. Any other rights that we have, you know, forgotten to specifically nail down are still held by the people, unless you know, through elected process, the people specifically take them back. So what you're saying is that the courts have ruled that the right to marry is a fundamental right, even though it's not found in the Constitution.
That's right. And the right to privacy was actually found in relation to abortion. And in the Massachusetts...
In Roe v. Wade.
Yes. And in the Massachusetts marriage case, in the arguments by the plaintiffs, they cited these abortion cases where the court found that these intimate decisions are something that people have a right to make without interference from the state.
Yeah. So what do you think, number one, I'm interested in both the legal and the political consequences of this. And by the way, if any of our listeners would like to get in on this conversation, our number is 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937, if you'd like to speak with David Mote. David is the author of the book Civil Wars, which, David, I assume is in bookstores from coast to coast?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and do you have a website, David, that people can find out more information about this?
No, but you can find out on Harcourt's website. Harcourt
okay.
is the publisher.
Oh, okay. HARCOURT.com?
Right.
Presumably, okay. David, both the legal consequences of this and the political consequences of this interest me. Let's talk about the legal consequences first. Do you think that this thing is going to stand, and do you think that this is going to spread to other states because there actually is a strong constitutional basis for it that is consistent with precedent?
It will stand in Massachusetts, I believe. There is a constitutional amendment that they are debating in Massachusetts, which could overturn it, but it's questionable whether that will pass. And whether it will go to other states, that's a state-by-state thing based on state constitutions. It's moving forward. There's a court case in New Jersey that's moving forward, and it will be battled in other states. There's also a backlash that's occurring where a number of states, such as Ohio, recently passed a law preventing recognition of any same-sex marriage, and a number of states have passed that kind of law. So the battle will continue state by state. The way it will probably unfold is people from different states will go to Massachusetts, get married, and then go home and seek to have their marriage recognized in their home state, and that's when these anti-gay marriage laws will be challenged, probably, and also the federal law that allows states to refuse to recognize gay marriages from other states.
Yeah, this is the Defense of Marriage Act that the Republican Congress passed and Bill Clinton signed into law in, what, 96, 98, something like that?
96 or something like that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that, I think it was Scalia, he got all bent out of shape about in the Texas sodomy case was he said this is going to ultimately, this position that the court is taking is ultimately going to lead not only to gay marriages, but to polygamy and legalizing sex with animals or whatever. You know, the whole right-wing hyper-reaction to this thing. Do you think that the Texas sodomy case is going to pave the way for striking down the Defense of Marriage Act that defines at a federal level marriage between as something between a man and a woman, and that will echo down to the state levels, or do you think that this is going to remain a states' rights sort of issue?
At the federal level, I'm not so sure, because in the Texas sodomy case, Sandra Day O'Connor's opinion pointed out she made clear that she wasn't sure that getting the state out of the business of policing intimate relationships would necessarily translate into giving state recognition to marriage. That she saw that there was a difference there, and so I'm not so sure that the federal courts are ready to take this on. In fact, that's why a lot of the Freedom to Marry advocates they've pursued this in the state courts, because they're not so hopeful about the federal courts. At the federal level, then, Congress is talking about a federal constitutional amendment. That would be another rather divisive and all-consuming political conflict.
Yeah, we saw in Vermont, I mean, this convulsed the state. Howard Dean, when he signed the thing into law, did it in a private ceremony. He was getting death threats. People had signs all over the state that said, "Take back Vermont," which was specifically about this issue, although a lot of tourists came in and thought that it meant buy some maple syrup, which was a nice irony. I mean, people were shot at. People's houses were set on fire. I mean, it was reminiscent of the civil rights movement in the 1950s. And it seems like the right is setting this thing up again. Do you see this as a civil rights issue? And do you think that it's going to get the kind of traction that the civil rights movement, the black-white civil rights movement, did?
It is a civil rights issue. It's different, though, in the sense that this involves people's personal, intimate choices, which are it's more complex, more personal, which makes it more volatile, and yet it's more confusing to people. I mean, it's clear to people that an African American ought to have the right to sit at a lunch counter and eat lunch. The whole issue of sexuality gets much murkier and complex for people. But when you get down to it, it's freedom of choice in our personal relationships is a civil right, and so it could get nasty. And it depends. I know the religious right is ready to push it hard, and it's a question of whether people like President Bush are going to how openly and how they're going to exploit.
How they're going to politicize this, right?
Yeah.
We're talking with David Motes, the author of Civil Wars about civil unions and gay marriage. Carrie from Santa Fe is on the line with a question for you, David. If you can hang out over this break, we'll pick them up on the other side. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
We'll be back with more music, but first, a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Your right to vote. It's something that most Americans take for granted. But today, serious questions are being asked about how we vote. Machines are used to process 98% of the votes in U.S. elections, and that includes absentee ballots. How do we know if our votes are being counted correctly? Experts say we don't know, that machines conceal the voting process, that whoever controls the machines controls the election. What is the government doing to protect your right to vote? There is no federal agency that regulates or monitors the voting machine industry. There are no restrictions on who can make, sell, or service voting equipment. They don't even have to be U.S. citizens. And there are no mandatory federal standards for voting equipment. Even if there were, experts say that voting machines can be easily rigged and impossible to safeguard. I'm Lynn Landis. I'm an investigative journalist. Learn more about this issue at my website, ecotalk.org. That's ecotalk.org.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, protecting America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We're talking with David Motz, author of Civil Wars, the battle for gay marriage. And we've got a couple of calls here I want to take in the final 5 minutes of the segment. Carrie from Santa Fe, you're on the air. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you guys? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I recently moved to New Mexico from Houston, Texas, so thank you for your radio station. You would be banned there. But I'm a 42-year-old lesbian who has lived her entire life out of the closet. Not a rebel. I don't go to causes, but I believe very firmly in everyone's right to the same realities. And reality in life is a marriage. You know, yep. If two people want to be together and they want to take the bad with the good, and there are some bad things in marriage, why is it the government's right to tell me what I can and can't do and who I can and can't be with? I hear all the time that the government's trying to legislate morality. They can never and they will never. And the bottom line for me is it's not a morality choice. It's a lifestyle yep. choice. If I want to buy a house with my partner, if I want to adopt a child with my partner, if I want to be able to have the same bank account as my partner, why is that the government's business? And that's my question.
Okay, well said, Carrie. Thanks for calling, and I appreciate that. Your thoughts on this, David?
Well, that's what the Freedom to Marry people are saying. It's not the government's business that gender really shouldn't play a part in it. In fact, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, in its ruling, they acknowledged that they were defining marriage differently than people have traditionally defined it in terms of a man and a woman. They said marriage is an exclusive, permanent, committed relationship, and without reference to gender, a permanent, exclusive, committed relationship can exist between people of the same sex.
Yeah, and it just seems so very straightforward, so very simple. 1-800-TALK, yes, Gizmo in Drain, Oregon, driving a truck through Oregon today. Hey, Gizmo, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Great.
What's up? I know you're getting better.
Thanks.
A short segment for you, so I'm just going to make my point here. It seems to me like this whole controversy is over the word marriage, you know, and the Christians want to keep their sacredness of that word. Why don't we make some kind of amendment to all the legal documents that refer to marriage that would compare it to a civil union, and thus giving anybody that wants to get civilly united, they can do that and have all the benefits of marriage, and where the right wing Christians want to get married, they can get married.
Yeah, in other words, get the states out of the marriage business and let the churches deal with the word marriage and
anywhere where it's legally necessary, where you use the word marriage in our society, then just put that and or civil union. I mean,
yeah. Well, that was my thought.
I'll hang up and let you guys respond to that. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Gizmo. That was my thought some months ago, but it's just, I mean, there's the word marriage is just all over the place in all these laws, and it just doesn't make sense, I don't think. I think it's a cop-out. I think we should just, what are your thoughts on this, David?
I think there's a certain logic to creating a secular civil union for everybody, heterosexual and homosexual, and then have a religious marriage for everybody else who wants a religious ceremony. There's a logic to that, but in our society, marriage is so pervasive and important to people that I don't think that's politically possible.
It's logical but not practical.
Right.
Yeah. One quick question before we go here, before we wrap up this topic. I've spent a fair amount of time in the Middle East, and in many of the Middle Eastern countries, you can marry up to four people. A husband can have up to four wives. Is this coming down the road?
I don't think so. I don't think any of the advocates of who are pushing freedom to marry for gays and lesbians are contemplating anything like that.
Yeah, I mean,
not
this
a big
is
lobby
actually
for that.
It's actually becoming an issue in France, where 20% of the population is Muslim. David, stick around, actually, if you can. We've got a couple of more calls here, if you don't mind. Can you stay on for another 5-10 minutes?
Okay,
great. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People often underestimate the power of nature. That mistake can cost them their lives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. An avalanche, a rushing river, and an ocean rip current have this much in common. They're among the forces of nature that people often underestimate. That can mean serious injury or death during outdoor recreation activities. Lawrence Gonzalez is the author of a new book called Deep Survival: Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why.
One of the things that I've learned in researching deep survival is we don't really learn things that we don't have direct physical experience of. The abstract learning that we get, even if somebody tells you, hey, don't go over there, that's dangerous, you may go over there because you've never actually experienced the force.
Gonzalez says it's a common mistake, one that leads us to underestimate the energy of natural systems.
A typical example of this is kids come to a stream, decide to wade across it, and they just don't appreciate how heavy and powerful water is, and they get in water that should be, they think, wadeable, up to their knees maybe, and they're swept away. We just really don't appreciate how powerful some of these natural forces can be.
Gonzalez says people not only misjudge the forces of nature, they overestimate their own abilities.
An avalanche is a good example. Lots of skiers say that they could outrun an avalanche, and they're wrong. An avalanche can travel at as much as 150 miles an hour.
Deep Survival describes a variety of outdoor accidents where miscalculation cost people their lives. Gonzalez says it's important to accurately assess the forces you'll encounter during any kind of expedition, and he says you should also be humble and accept that nature is more powerful than you. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I think we're just too stupid for democracy.
ever thought majority should rule. I think we're just too stupid for democracy. Show me a mirror, I'll show you a fool. Think of the majority of people that we meet. Do you think that their opinions should be law? Well, if you're like the majority, you think the rest are nuts. Thus, democracy reveals a fatal flaw.
Oh, come on. I'm not that cynical. I'm sorry. I'm just not that cynical. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It is 26 minutes before the hour here. We're talking to David Motz, the author of Civil Wars, A Battle for Gay Marriage, The Battle for Gay Marriage. And David, I want to say, Louise commented to me just before, you know, I brought up this issue of that in many, as far as I know, all of the Middle Eastern countries, with the exception of Israel, and I think even in Israel, because actually it's legal for a man to have four wives, and this is a growing, and which is the standard in much of the Islamic world. No more than four, but up to four. And of course, you got the Mormons who fought that battle for years and years in the United States. And this is the thing that I'm not suggesting that this should be the next change or anything, but I can tell you that this is what the right is going to be doing. They're going to be coming along saying, okay, you want gay marriages, let's have polygamy too, and just further try to inflame this thing. Do you see? Have you seen this started yet?
They make that argument. They've made that argument all along. I think the counter argument is that we have, as a society, decided that multiple marriages, polygamy, is exploitive. And that it's not a religious point of view. It's sort of it's a social and economic thing, you know, that it's sort of a women's rights thing.
Yeah, but this, I mean, like I said, this is becoming a big battle in France, where 20% of the population is Muslim.
And, you know, I've lived in the Muslim world also, and I was in Afghanistan. I met an Afghan village leader, about 70 years old, who was sort of with a twinkle in his eye describing the fact that he had a new 16-year-old bride. It was, you know, that's a different culture.
Yeah, it is very much. Let's get to the calls here, just specifically on this issue of gay marriage. Mike in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I think this is a dangerous argument for Democrats to get into. And one thing I haven't heard raised in this argument, I'm for civil unions for gay people, but isn't marriage a means of tracing a person's genealogy? Isn't this part of our genealogy? It's the merging of genetic.
Well, legally it is. I mean, biologically, marriage, you can produce babies without marriage.
There is babies without marriage, but I mean, isn't marriage sort of a device to help us keep track of our genealogy?
Yeah, David, your thoughts?
Well, the fact is that marriage also occurs among people who have no intention of having children. A couple of 70-year-olds might get married, and they.
See, I see that more as a civil union. I mean, I agree that, you know, people should have civil unions if you're committed to a partner, that you should share, you know, rights and privileges that all people, you know, that have that kind of union. But I think, I mean, and I'm all for the civil union thing, but I think the Democrats are going to really take a beating on this if they stand up for gay marriage.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Mike. But you're again putting forth that, well, this is very rational argument. But the bottom line is that people getting together and having legal agreements. It's called marriage in all the states except for Vermont.
Thanks for your comment. Genealogy should be part of what marriage is. I mean, that's sort of a conservative point of view, maybe.
Well, I think it is for gays who get married. You've got rights of survivorship, and there are gay couples who are raising children and producing a genealogy.
But that's not really genealogy.
Why not? Why is less genealogy than somebody who adopts a
test tubes and you know, it's unless. You know, it's not the actual genetic merging of man and woman into a child.
So, Mike, are you suggesting that couples who adopt shouldn't be married?
No, I think they could be married. I mean,
and you see where this logic breaks down?
It is a tricky question. I agree, but I think it's one that the Democrats will take a beating on. Although I am for civil unions because people deserve rights.
Yeah. Okay. Well said, Mike. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate it. You know, this is one of those things where it can get really messy politically, even though, you know, practically and morally, I think the issues are fairly stark. Mark in Eureka, California has some thoughts on this. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks for having me. The Gallup poll people called me 2 weeks ago and asked me this question. They also asked me about Pete Rose also.
Oh, interesting.
And when I told them my answer, she laughed so hard, and I was trying to tell her, I'm completely serious in my stance on this. I live in Northern California in the middle of Humboldt County. We're on the coast near the Oregon border. It's really isolated. We have kind of a hippy-dippy population, high concentration of gays and lesbians, very nice people. It's a great place to live. I'm not gay myself, but I had a vasectomy before I got married with the intention of never having kids. Just to address the point to Jim or whoever his name was, and ultimately, for me, and this is what I told the Gallup poll people, our economy is so depressed here. Minimum wage jobs, there aren't even enough of them. People scratch people's eyes out for a minimum wage job around here. And one of the biggest jobs around here is it's a beautiful place up here, Redwoods. Julia Butterfly did her Redwood thing 4 miles from here.
It's the marriage business, right, Mark?
Exactly. And yeah. It is big here, and we have... Our newspaper produces this huge manual every couple months about, you know, a zillion different bridal accessories and bands and caterers. And
Mark, and we're seeing this in Vermont. There is a whole industry that has come out of nowhere, and it's actually fairly quiet. You have to look for it to find it. But, I mean, literally thousands of people are coming to Vermont to have civil unions, and it has been a boom to those communities that have embraced it, even though it, you know, and it has been relatively uncontroversial. So it sounds like that's what you're suggesting, that this could be an economic positive for you there in Eureka, California.
Exactly. It could change us around. It could be our bread and butter.
Okay. David Moats, your thoughts, the author of Civil Wars, your thoughts on this?
Well, a lot of people, when we were arguing about civil unions in Vermont, there were those who said this is going to damage Vermont's reputation and is going to damage tourism. In fact, there have been more than 5,000 civil unions, only 800 or so of Vermont couples, and a number of inns have created package deals and so on. You can come to Vermont and have a weekend, have your civil union, and have a nice vacation. So, the sky hasn't fallen.
No, not only has the sky not fallen, but you know, business is actually booming, as it were, you know, gently booming. Mark, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. We have Chuck, a trucker in South Carolina, is on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, I got a couple questions.
Okay.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How will the civil union or gay marriage affect the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution, that what is good in one state is recognized in all other states? That's my first question. And my second question is, how will this affect presumption of paternity? Let's say that gays adopt a child. Who is going to be responsible for the support of that child in the event of a divorce? I'm going to listen to the answers, okay?
Okay. Chuck, you're listening on Sirius Satellite, I assume.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah, thank
great.
You.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. Well, David, what are your thoughts on these two issues?
On the divorce issue, the support of the child will be by the two two couples and, the two people, and I assume that the welfare of the child would be paramount, just as it is in a divorce now. And the responsibilities will be apportioned. And what was the first part of the question?
You know, I don't remember. Oh, the full
faith and credit.
Thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Defense of Marriage Act, the federal law that allows states to refuse to recognize gay marriages from other states, will probably be challenged on the basis of the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to turn out legally, but it's definitely grounds for a legal challenge.
Yeah, explain that just real quickly for the lay folk. You know, what does this mean?
In other words, I enter into a contract in Vermont, a business contract or whatever, the other states. Give full faith and credit to contracts in other states. You know, one legal arrangements across state lines, and right. I'm not exactly sure. Not everything applies to every state. You know, some states have laws that don't apply in other states. So I'm not sure how that'll be sorted out, but there's basis right. for challenge.
Yeah, and it was originally actually written into the Constitution to protect interstate commerce, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was for the purpose of that, so that contract law in one state could be enforced in another. Chuck, and I would add, you know, when I was a kid growing up 20, 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, if people got divorced, there was this presumption that the mother would get the children, that the father would pay the bills, you know, and increasingly now we're saying, okay, let's look at the situation of the mother and father in the case of a straight marriage and see who would be the appropriate person to care for the child and who's the appropriate person to pay child support. And it's changing. And I think that's, you know, that's just a very rational and coherent approach. And that's the one that should be applied in a gay situation where you don't have two different genders. I mean, essentially, that's what you're saying, David, I'm assuming.
Yes. The welfare of the child comes first, whether it's one partner providing support or the other.
Right, which very much has not been the case in the history of the United States
right.
Up until just very recently.
Right.
Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Your thoughts on this?
Good morning. I wasn't going to chime in.
You got to speak up, Roy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't going to chime in, but when the fellow was talking about this becoming a thing that the Democrats ought to distance themselves from, I think it's a total framing issue. If these folks, when they get asked about it, would just stand up and say, I have never voted to restrict anybody's rights, and the way I understand this, this is a state's rights issue. And as president, I have nothing to do with it anyway.
And except that they ultimately someday may. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton has already got himself involved in this thing with the Defense of Marriage Act.
I agree, but that
and the Republicans are going to try and frame this with a federal constitutional amendment, which everybody knows won't go anywhere. But boy, will it play well in the press.
Which goes right back to the framing issue. If they would work to frame it as a intolerant
what?
Civil rights issue. And that's where I come
yeah.
from. Quite frankly, I think I'm kind of in the vast big middle. I really, it totally unaffects me.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah,
but, unaffects me. I don't
and
care if they're shacking up, whatever, but if I'm a person in a hospital and somebody's demanding to see their partner, I would love to have them whip out something that says they have the right to see their partner. If I'm a administrating something at a bank, I would like to have them have a document that says, here's our relationship. But other than that, I'm totally unaffected by this. And that's where the majority of the people are. And I think if it gets framed as the civil rights issue and back to states' rights, again, it's the states' rights.
This is what the
neocons always were wanting.
Yeah, at least back in the civil rights era, that's what they were wanting. Yeah, good point, Roy. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. What do you think, David? Is this going to sink the Democrats? I mean, are the Republicans going to reframe this as, you're the party of the super liberals, and particularly Kerry from Massachusetts? I mean, is this going to what kind of problem is this?
They're going to try to do that, and I think the Democrats. Ought to follow Howard Dean's lead. He said, "I'm the one who signed the civil unions law. Who else would have had the courage to sign a bill like that? I mean, it takes a certain amount of courage to stand up for civil rights. And I think the Democrats have to not be afraid. They have to believe in this position. And on the issue of states' rights, as a matter of fact." Vice President Cheney, when he was campaigning in 2000, before he was vice president, he came to Vermont and they asked him about this. He said, well, it's a matter for the states.
Yeah.
So he's on record saying this is a state issue, and he has a lesbian daughter, and so maybe that had something to do with his view. But
I suspect so.
So, yes, the Republicans can try to make a big deal out of this, and I think the Democrats have to stand up and have the courage of their convictions.
There you go. And the Republicans already are making a big deal about it. And you ain't seen nothing yet. Let me tell you, having lived through it in Vermont, you ain't seen nothing yet. Amanda in Florida is on the line with a comment on gay marriages. Hey, Amanda, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say if Dick Cheney was my dad, I'd be lesbian, too. But aside from that, my question is, when, if it's not up to the United States, the federal government, when are these rights, like for Social Security benefits, VA benefits, those kinds of things, if they're just the state, well, then do those rights come in?
Oh, yeah. Don't you have to have federal recognition? This gets murky, doesn't it, David?
Well, one of the limitations on civil unions, Vermont has civil unions, but civil unions aren't recognized by the federal government. So federal benefits don't come to the partners of a civil union. If they are partners in a marriage, marriage benefits go to spouses as far as Social Security and veterans benefits and all that. And
but doesn't the Defense of Marriage Act prevent that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But if marriage is legalized in Massachusetts, any limitations on marriage benefits by the federal government would be challenged, I'm sure.
Great. Okay. Thanks for your comment, Amanda. David, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
David Motes, the author of Civil Wars, The Battle for Gay Marriage. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals Whale. And what your animals do to you. Seal. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal Jack. Questions Zebra. From A to Z. Iguana. Sunday nights on IE America Minx. Radio Narwhal. Network.
Ostrich.
Oh, Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
The Mike Molloy Show.
An interview with George and Pickles from the current issue of Ladies Home Journal. They're asked about what September 11, 2001 was like for them personally. Although over 3,000 people had just perished, George W. was able to find some humor by the end of the day. The day ended on a relatively humorous note. The agent said, "You'll be sleeping downstairs." And I said, "No, we like our own bed." So I told the agent, "We're going upstairs." And the agent comes running up and says, "Run your attack. We need you downstairs." So there we go. I'm in my running shorts and my T-shirt, and I'm barefooted, got the dog in one hand, Laura had the cat.
I don't have my contacts in, and I'm in my fuzzy house slippers.
We're heading straight down to the basement because there's an incoming unidentified airplane which is going here toward the White House, and then the guy says it's a friendly airplane, and we hustle all the way back upstairs and go to bed.
And we just lay there thinking about the way we must have looked.
We got a laugh out of it.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here on the IE America Radio Network. It's 5 minutes before the hour. And I think we've kind of done this topic of gay marriages enough. You get the point, and this is something that's going to be the right. You know, the worse the economy gets, the more people die in Iraq, the more you're going to hear people on the right squealing about gay marriages. And you know, just get ready. What I wanted to share with you in the last couple minutes of the program here, of this hour anyway, this article by Nicholas Kristof in today's New York Times. He talks about how there was actually this period of time, and I had forgotten about this, when Reagan was president, where the Soviets, the KGB, and Putin back. I wonder if Putin was ahead of the KGB at that time. It'd be interesting to track that back. But anyway, the KGB in the 1980s became convinced that we were going to launch a preemptive nuclear strike against them. They even had a code name for it, Ryan, R-Y-A-N. And they started looking everywhere for evidence, and they found it. And we almost had a nuclear war. The Soviet Union almost launched a preemptive attack against us because they were certain we were about to do one against them, which, number one, demonstrates the danger of publicly saying, as the Bush administration has, that you're in favor of preemptive wars. But, number two, it really shows the danger of saying to your intelligence agencies, we're convinced that this is a particular reality, now you go out and find the evidence for it, rather than saying to your intelligence agencies, what's the truth? And we see increasingly through this whole situation with Iraq that Don Rumsfeld started his own little, you know, cook the books intelligence agency within the Department of Defense, the Defense Department, and was gathering information, and the CIA was saying no. You know, here, as Kristof says, in September 2002, the Defense Intelligence Agency issued a still classified report saying, quote, there is no reliable information, end quote, on whether Iraq had chemical weapons. Yet in the same month, Kristof writes, Donald Rumsfeld was telling the House committee the opposite. He said, we do know that the Iraqi regime currently has chemical and biological weapons of mass destruction, and we do know that they are currently pursuing nuclear weapons. This 1 month after his own Defense Intelligence Agency told him it wasn't true. This is not a failure of intelligence, my friends. This is a failure of political leadership. This is lying to the American people. This is Tom Hartman. It's the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us so far. We're here on the IE America Radio Network, live from the Winter Brain Conference in Palm Springs, California.
It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
She is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Banjila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Banjila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Lawrence Silberman, a retired judge nominated by the Bush administration as the co-chairman of the commission investigating pre-war intelligence on Iraq, was involved in a major cover-up during the Reagan era, his critics alleged yesterday. Mr. Silberman sat on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review, which approved the expanded surveillance powers for the Justice Department under the controversial Patriot Act. George W. Bush named him as the senior Republican on a nine-member bipartisan commission examining how and why U.S. intelligence had been so wrong about Saddam Hussein's alleged weapons of mass destruction. It will report next spring, well after the November elections. The Defense Department has requested that George W. Bush's payroll records from his service in the National Guard be sent to Washington from a DOD archive in Colorado to ascertain whether they can be released to news organizations and public interest groups that have formally requested them in recent days. Bush, in an interview shown Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press, said he would release all his records, including pay stubs, to put to rest suggestions that he may not have fulfilled his duty near the end of his Guard service. The other documents that should still be available are Bush's payroll records, which would show what drills Bush was compensated for during that period. Officials said yesterday that the DOD in Washington would review the master copy of Bush's payroll records, which have been stored on microfiche for 30 years at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service in Denver. George W. Bush's press secretary and a former White House press aide testified on Friday to a federal grand jury investigating who improperly disclosed the identity of a CIA agent. The appearances of the press secretary Scott McClellan and the press aide Adam Levine reflected what lawyers in the case said was the quickening pace of a criminal inquiry in which a special prosecutor is examining conversations between journalists and the White House. One set of documents that prosecutors repeatedly referred to in their meetings with White House aides are extensive notes compiled by Louis Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff and national security advisor. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
The WhiteHouse.com website is getting out of the pornography business. Its owner says he's worried what his preschool-age son might think. The owner said he doesn't know yet how much the sale will fetch. He claimed the WhiteHouse.com site, which advertises pictures of hot interns, earns more than $1 million each year in revenues and said he's invested more than $7 million since 1997. The site currently features a picture of Democratic frontrunner John Kerry with the message, "Our candidates are better looking." For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
George Pinocchio Bush was at it again in his latest State of the Union peroration, and his biggest lie was not about weapons of mass destruction. Bush tried in his speech to diffuse the growing anxiety and anger about the loss of middle-class jobs by making the bald-faced assertion that the solution is simple: more job training. Millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans must have stared in slack-jawed disbelief as this son of privilege mouthed the corporate line that everything is okay with our economy if only the workers would get more training and improve their skills. Training for what? Here came George's whopper. Much of our job growth will be found in high-skilled fields. That's a lie, and Bush knows it. Well, okay, he's clueless about real life, so he probably doesn't know it, but his speechwriters do. Bush's own Labor Department reports that of the 30 occupations that will account for the highest job growth between now and 2010, two-thirds require minimal skills. Yes, high-tech companies will create 284,000 more jobs for computer software engineers in that period, but many more jobs than that will be created in each of these very low-tech fields: freight movers, home health aides, janitors, waitresses, security guards, office clerks, and cashiers. The number one job creator for America's future? Restaurant workers, including fast food. You don't need a high-tech degree, you need a hairnet. And all of these jobs pay pitiful wages. By the way, for the past 3 years, Bush has cut the job training budget. And forget about those software engineering jobs. Companies are now shipping them off to India, Russia, and other low-wage countries. This is Jim Hightower saying, training doesn't create jobs, and low-wage jobs don't create a middle class. America needs a living wage, labor law reform, an end to subsidies for corporations that ship our good jobs out, and a president who has a clue.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. Not all the programs affecting the environment and public health were cut in President Bush's 2005 budget proposal to Congress, points out BushGreenWatch.com. Some, including programs, now, again, you know, keep in mind, people talking about the budget and this 2005 budget proposal and how everything was flat funded. You know, 1.9% increases, down to 0.9% increases, all below the rate of inflation, cutting back on all these different programs. And yet, those programs supporting the oil industry, the coal industry, and the nuclear industry are all, in fact, going to get more cash, more money. The U.S. Public Interest Research Group, the legislative director, Anna Arillo, said, "We are outraged that the president's 2005 budget request rewards the nuclear, coal, and timber industries at the expense of clean, renewable energy and wildlife habitat protection." The oil and gas companies, for example, are slated for millions of additional taxpayer dollars for oil and gas research and development. At the same time, the Bush budget reduces money for proven clean energy programs. Most notably, it cuts solar energy programs by 4% and biomass by 16%. It also includes a 60% increase for the so-called Clean Coal Power Initiative, which is basically a subsidy for the coal industry that's already received $2 billion in taxpayer money through this program. Absolutely remarkable. So I wanted to share that we also want to move along to the topic of jobs. The interesting article in today's Los Angeles Times. I'm surprised this wasn't on the front page. It was on page 10. Listen to this headline. Bush supports shift of jobs overseas. And this guy can actually say this with a straight face. Warren Verth and Vaith and Edwin Chen wrote the article for the Los Angeles Times. They point out the movement of American factory jobs and white-collar work to other countries is part of a positive transformation. A positive transformation that will enrich the U.S. economy over time, said the Bush administration Monday. Yes, indeed. Well, it is going to enrich certain parts of the U.S. economy. I mean, for example, when Nike started making their shoes in Malaysia, they kept charging, you know, relatively the same prices, but Phil Knight became a billionaire. What you find is that as more and more of our manufacturing and our service jobs, our information technology jobs are moving overseas, what's happening is that the corporations that are still here that are moving those jobs overseas are getting more and more profitable. Look at what's happening in Wall Street. We are seeing a recovery for the rich and the ownership class, and an absolute devastating disaster for the working class of America. And yes, this is real. We do have class warfare going on in the United States. It was declared by the Republicans in 1980 when Reagan started against the air traffic control. Well, it was declared by the Republicans long before that. But I should say the conservatives, you know, because for many years the Democrats were the one of the reasons the Democratic Party was so strong in the South. You know, throughout the late 19th century, early 20th century, the Democratic Party was the party of slave labor, literally, and then of cheap labor, with the right to work laws in various states in the South. It's just that the Republicans have taken over that. But this is the conservative worldview. But here in the president's annual report to Congress, which just came out on Monday, yesterday, Gregory Mankiw, the chairman of Bush's Council of Economic Advisors, says more things are tradable than were tradable in the past. In other words, you can't just buy and sell shoes now with Malaysia. You can actually trade labor. Used to be if you wanted to hire somebody from Malaysia to work for an American company, you had to get a special visa, you had to go through a whole song and dance. It was an expensive, long, drawn-out, protracted process. You had to prove that there was nobody else in the United States who could do that job, as well as that person. And then it was carefully monitored by the INS and by the Department of State. Well, now, as the Bush's Council of Economic Advisors points out, more things are tradable. In other words, labor. And then he goes on to say, and that's a good thing. This report predicts, this report that says it's a good thing that we can export jobs like this, predicts that 2.6 million jobs will be created in 2004. This year, they're suggesting we're going to create more than 2.5 million jobs. Well, we're 2 months into this year. Where are they? I'm telling you, George Bush is going to be the first president since Herbert Hoover to have presided over a net loss of jobs during his presidency. His father nearly did. Part of the Bush legacy, I guess. 2.6 million jobs. This is a part of a week-long effort, according to the LA Times, by the Bush administration to highlight signs that the recovery, the so-called economic recovery, is picking up steam. We will see. I just, you know, John Kerry, read the report. He says, I've got the feeling this report was prepared by the same people who brought us the intelligence on Iraq. He said, I don't think we need a new report about jobs in America. I think we need a new president who's going to create jobs in America and put Americans back to work. John Edwards had a comment on that. He says that this so-called recovery would be, quote, a news bulletin to the American people that the economy was improving and that the outsourcing of jobs was good for America. These people, he said of the Bush administration, what planet do they live on? They're out of touch. It's a 411-page report talking about how the Bush tax cuts must be made permanent, the Social Security must be restructured, a fancy way of saying give it to the bankers. He's the banking industry that gives so much money to the Bush administration. Give it to them and let them handle the trillions of dollars in the Social Security Trust Fund and suck their piece off the top, just like in the healthcare industry. We've got people sucking off the top. The president's report endorses the relatively new phenomenon, of outsourcing high-end, white-collar work to India and other countries, a trend that has stirred concern within such affected occupations as computer programming and medical diagnosis. Maybe we will outsource a few radiologists, says Mankiw. This is the shill for George Bush, the guy who's, you know, the front man for George Bush. What does that mean? Well, maybe the next generation of doctors will train fewer radiologists and will train more general practitioners or surgeons. Maybe we've learned that we don't need a comparative advantage in radiologists. Government should try to solve the short-term disruption by helping train displaced workers, he says. What are you going to train them as? Well, teach them how to flip hamburgers. I mean, that seems like that'll work. On Thursday, this little program here, George Bush, his Ain't Life Wonderful boogie is going to Pennsylvania's capital, Harrisburg, another swing state that he's already visited more than two dozen times since becoming president. Brad in Brooklyn is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES. Our number in just a few minutes. We're going to have on Rob Call of Op-Ed News and the Winter Brain Conference. But first, Brad is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES. Hey, Brad, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. How is it in California?
It is beautiful here. The sun is shining. It is it's just marvelous. Although, boy, does it get cold at night out here in the desert.
Oh, really? I wanted to call you because you were talking about the parties, the Republican and Democratic parties, a few minutes ago, and it reminded me that I wanted to tell you about something. I wanted to encourage your listeners to contact their Board of Elections and check their registration. If they're registered as Democrats, they should double-check it. And the reason I'm recommending that is because after over 20 years of being registered as a Democrat in New York and 4 or 5 years, or 4 or 5 elections, at my current election district, last September, I went to vote in a primary, Democratic primary, and they wouldn't let me vote. I filled out a card while I was there, just in case there was a error in their paperwork or something. But I found out a couple months later when I got some mail from the Board of Elections saying that they didn't let me vote because I was registered as a Republican.
Well, then you should have voted in the Republican primary, and you could have voted against Bush.
I don't even know if there was one. It was like some judges or something. It was not a presidential primary, but I would have been so upset if I'd have got that it was a presidential primary. And, you know, they let me fill out a piece of paper and stuff and as if my vote was going to count, but in retrospect it didn't, because the reason they hadn't let me vote was because I had been re-registered somehow mysteriously after over 20 years as a Republican.
Isn't that strange?
So
I wonder how that happened.
Well, I called the other day, and I called the Board of Elections, and I actually had my my card, my election card, whatever, and I was able to just punch in the number, and it confirmed my district, my polling place or voting place, and it confirmed that I am now considered a Democratic Party member. But I felt a lot better about doing that 3 or 4 weeks before our March 2nd primary than waiting till the last minute.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, and folks, if you're listening, you know, check out what's happened to your voter rolls. You know, after what happened in Florida, I wouldn't put anything past these guys. Brad, thanks for the comment. Thanks for sharing that with us and the heads up there. Kim, a trucker in Neenah, Wisconsin today, is on the line. Kim, I assume you're listening to us on the Sirius satellite.
Yes, sir, I am.
Listen, great.
You know, one thing that irritates me about my fellow Democrats is that we are the dumbest people in the world. Now, we got slaughtered, the Clintons got slaughtered on that health care proposal because of that advertisement, was it Harry and Irma or something like
Harry
that?
Harry and Louise. The ad was put together by the ad agency that was started by the guy that is currently the head of AARP, William Minnelli.
That's right. Well, why in the hell aren't we putting together ads and, similar funny ads and blast the darn Republicans and this Bush proposal, which is now law, for his Medicaid?
Well, MoveOn.org is trying to do that, Kim, and CBS wouldn't run their ad.
Well, they wouldn't run it on their football day.
Right.
Now, they didn't, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, but the way everybody was talking about it, I don't think they said, well, we won't run it any time. They just wouldn't run it that particular day for the football day, which was, let's face it, after all the other fiascos, including the horse that blew gas, how could they say that was any more ridiculous?
Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah,
the thing
I know.
Is, we need to put together our own campaign of ads that are funny. Let's face it, we live in an age of 30-second bites that you got to have humor.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kim. The problem is the health insurance industry, which is going to lose big under national health insurance. They're going to lose big. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars in a lobbying campaign, those Harry and Louise ads. And there isn't an advocacy group for democracy out there that is as powerful as the advocacy group for the corporate, what they call special interests. It's really corporatism. Kim, thanks for your call. I appreciate your comments. This is Tom Hartman. Sarah, hang on the line. We'll pick you up on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large huge corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
A chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back, broadcasting live from the Winter Brain Conference here in Palm Springs, California. Tom Hartman. On the IE America Radio Network, Josh, a trucker in Kansas, is on the line. Hey, Josh, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I love the show, man.
Thank you.
You were talking about jobs. Yeah, you're welcome. And was thinking of a conversation I had with my dad recently, and he was talking about something that happened with Allende in Chile. And the corporations, and he said that if it looked like Republicans were going to lose and the corporations had an extreme vested interest in them staying in power, that they could afford to hire temporarily millions of people and lay them off after the election and thus drive the unemployment rate down and make things look good for Bush. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, you know, Josh, to some extent, they've done that with the war in Iraq. We have spent enough money in Iraq to put over 1.5 million teachers in our schools for a full year. I mean, that's how much we've spent in the last year in Iraq, the cost of 1.5 million full-time teacher salaries in the United States. But a lot of that money actually is coming back to the United States. We dropped all this ordnance, all these missiles and bombs and things in Iraq. And it all has to be replaced. So there are a lot of jobs being created, as it were, or, you know, still running in the United States in the defense industry, in those industries that the Carlyle Group, the Bush family investment vehicle, invests in. But it's pretty much limited to that, unfortunately. But there are those who suggest, and a lot of economists who suggest, that the only reason why there's any kind of net positive, as it were, with jobs in the United States, or the reason why it hasn't been even worse than it is, and it's pretty grim, is because of the bounce from the war in Iraq.
Right, and also what I've heard about how they don't, after you're unemployed for long enough, they just drop you right off the rolls and you don't even count in the unemployment rate anymore.
Yep, you're no longer counted. In fact, that's the cover story in today's USA Today newspaper. It's a growing number of white-collar workers and other job seekers are so discouraged that they're giving up. This is something that happened to blue-collar workers two decades ago, when Reagan did the same thing to people and started busting up the unions. Instead of looking for work, they're living off severance or buyout packages, moving back in with mom and dad, or relying on spouse income to get by. Things are tough. Are you experiencing this in the trucking industry?
I'm sorry?
Are you seeing in the trucking industry, any signs of the economy getting good or bad as a result of things that are happening in your business?
Well, January, from what I can tell, is a little bit busier than last January. But at the same time, I'm more experienced, so I know how to keep running better. I don't really know. I know that there's a lot of dissatisfaction among truck drivers in general. But that's a long story and one I'm not really qualified to talk much about. I can't tell, really. I'm just in my own little microcosm here. But I love the show, man, and I'm going to get off and leave everybody alone, and thank you for doing your show.
Okay, Josh, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Always great to hear from our truckers who are listening on Sirius Satellite. More than 400,000 workers are so discouraged by the job market that they've given up looking for work. You get this? 400,000 people are so discouraged. And these aren't, I mean, they've got this category called discouraged workers, which is where they no longer count you. It means basically your unemployment benefits have run out. But this is actual people who just, you know, really and truly have tried and tried and tried and tried and tried to give it, to get a job, and they can't. They can't find it. They just can't find work. There, Damon Burkle, a career consultant who founded Professionals in Transition Support Group, says they're watching soap operas, drinking beer. It's living hell. The discouraged worker is beaten down by the weight of rejection. Their money is running out. Their self-esteem is at an all-time low. We talked a couple of weeks ago on this program about a study done in the UK that showed that suicides go up under conservative administrations in the United States and Australia and in the United Kingdom, and have consistently over the last 50 years. Here we're seeing the same thing. This is a tragedy in the making. The job situation in the United States. Stay tuned. We're going to have On Rob Call with Op-Ed News and the Winter Brain Conference. This is Tom Hartman. 29 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People often underestimate the power of nature. That mistake can cost them their lives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. An avalanche, a rushing river, and an ocean rip current have this much in common. They're among the forces of nature that people often underestimate. That can mean serious injury or death during outdoor recreation activities. Lawrence Gonzalez is the author of a new book called Deep Survival: Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why.
One of the things that I've learned in researching deep survival is we don't really learn things that we don't have direct physical experience of. The abstract learning that we get, even if somebody tells you, hey, don't go over there, that's dangerous, you may go over there because you've never actually experienced the force.
Gonzalez says it's a common mistake, one that leads us to underestimate the energy of natural systems.
A typical example of this is kids come to a stream, decide to wade across it, and they just don't appreciate how heavy and powerful water is, and they get in water that should be, they think, wadeable, up to their knees maybe, and they're swept away. We just really don't appreciate how powerful some of these natural forces can be.
Gonzalez says people not only misjudge the forces of nature, they overestimate their own abilities.
An avalanche is a good example. Lots of skiers say that they could outrun an avalanche, and they're wrong. An avalanche can travel at as much as 150 miles an hour.
Deep Survival describes a variety of outdoor accidents where miscalculation cost people their lives. Gonzalez says it's important to accurately assess the forces you'll encounter during any kind of expedition, and he says you should also be humble and accept that nature is more powerful than you. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back, my friends. This is Tom Hartman, and we're here at the live at the Winter Brain Conference, StoryCon, sitting here talking with Rob Call, who's the guy who put this thing together, an entrepreneur, an activist. He founded opednews.com to get out his thoughts on politics and that part of the worldview, and is doing the conference. Rob, give us a 30-second snapshot of what's going on with the conference here, first of all, for those of you, for those folks who might not have caught it yesterday, but not so long that those who did will get overdosed.
It's a blend of training the brain and studying the brain so we can understand how to help people to get the most out of their brains using biofeedback and other kinds of education and training and using technology. It's also about optimal functioning and positive psychology, and which is very different from pathology-oriented psychology. And it weaves in the art, science, and application of story, because story is such a powerful part of how our consciousness works and how we persuade people and how things get done in this world, whether it's politics or religion or how you decide which church to go to.
What are some of the really interesting, new, fascinating, weird, strange, cutting-edge, remarkable things that were presented here over the last, this conference has been going for 5 days now, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, right at the edges are some of the work that's being done at University of Arizona by Gary Schwartz and Beverly Rubik and Louis Malmedrona with biofield research. This is being funded by a $1.8 million grant from NIH. 1,000 years ago, instead of saying biofield, they would have called it an aura.
Oh, interesting. So they're studying this.
This is science. This is hard science, and they're using devices that measure electromagnetic fields and light fields to detect the energy that emanates from and around the body. And what they're finding is that it's there, and like any energy that creates a field, it radiates out infinitely, and it connects people and living objects together in a way that creates this beautiful interplay of energy that connects all of us together in an amazing quantum way.
Yeah, remarkable.
So that's way out at the edges. Yeah. Gary's also doing work with life after death.
This is Gary Schwartz. He's a professor at the University of Arizona.
Formerly a professor at Harvard.
Yeah.
He's doing that research, collecting data on mediums who communicate with the afterlife. This is way out stuff, but he's got data.
Yeah.
Then we have practical stuff, like people who are working with autism, using brain training to get kids to function in a way that they haven't been able to function with any other drugs or diets or anything like that.
I mean, some of it is very, very practical stuff. I saw a workshop this afternoon on incontinence, bedwetting, and using neurofeedback to resolve these kinds of things.
That's right. It's being used a lot for attention deficit disorder and closed head injuries and alcoholism and substance abuse. By learning how to get in touch, to work your brainwaves better, you can access parts of yourself that have been blocked or that you're disconnected from or that aren't functioning at their best, that are too slow or too fast, and that produce brainwaves that are too associated, that are associated with too much distractibility.
Right. But one of the main foci is, or focal points, or however one should say that, is is optimal functioning? You've made this, that part of this conference for years and years, and I thought the laughter thing was interesting.
Oh, well, we had somebody from India. In India, there are about 6,000 different laughter clubs that every morning they get up and they laugh for an hour.
Together. People get together and they laugh.
Ho, ho, ho. And they laugh with their necks, with their butts. They jump up and down, and they do it with eye contact with each other. We did it here with about 20 of us, and it was wonderful. Matter of fact, I got invited to go to India to talk about some of the work I've done. Looking at the electromyographic, electrical muscle activity associated with smiling, where I've found some interesting things. What I found that's really interesting is that if you strain to smile, if you put a grin on your face and really strain to get a big smile, you get a reading. And then if you just laugh naturally, effortlessly, you generally produce more muscle activity with the effortless laugh than you do when you strain to smile. There's a lesson in that, I think, that if you can allow the natural energy in you to come out that's positive, it will do things that when you strain unnaturally, it doesn't work. And I want to take that to politics.
Okay, great. And let me just, before you do, just let me let our listeners know, if you want to talk with Rob, if you have any thoughts about, first of all, if you have any questions about any of these topics, and because he knows a little bit about a lot of these things and a lot about quite a few of them. And secondly, if you want to talk with him about what he's doing with opednews.com, one of the progressive news websites out there, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. So you were saying, taking this to politics...
Yeah, well, with positive psychology, we have a new field that looks at helping people to empower themselves, to strengthen themselves. And this is different than getting rid of symptoms. This is different than treating symptoms with a drug. And I want to compare this to hating Bush and wanting to move towards a positive, progressive direction.
Okay, so make the comparison.
Well, the fact is that... The feeling that so many of us have towards Bush, the anger, the desire to get rid of Bush that has brought out record numbers of people at all the Democratic primaries so far, which is a great sign, is an energy that needs to be channeled in positive directions. Because if you get rid of symptoms, it doesn't make you happy. It may make you feel better, but it doesn't necessarily make you happy. It's really important, and I believe the same is so for politics, for us to have positive visions and goals that we need to be working towards. And they're out there. The Democrats have tons of them. The liberals and the progressives and the Greens have tons of them.
For example, what are the things that when you write about on Op-Ed News, I know you did a piece sometime back that was something like 35 things that we can do, or
positive visions for progressives.
What are the things that you get the strongest response to when you talk about on opednews.com?
Treating people right, helping to get people to be able to grow and reach their full potential, getting corporations to behave in a positive way that contributes. I did another piece that it's totally financially viable to set up laws and taxes and rules that make it profitable for corporations to do good, to treat humans like they should.
Yeah.
And instead of the situation we have now where the corporations are the monster invention that humans created that have turned on humans.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of us setting our vision and our goals, and not, we got to go beyond Bush. We got to go way past that. And Rush Limbaugh complains that all the liberals do is complain. And we've got to.
He says this after 8 years of the Clinton administration doing nothing but complaining about it. It's so ironic. Anyhow, you were saying.
So we basically have it, like the Apollo Alliance from ourfuture.org, the group that holds the Take Back America conference, a great organization. The Apollo Alliance has a vision for establishing an alternative to fossil fuels in a hurry. And they call it the Apollo Alliance because I believe in it 100%. We need to have a fuel program that is as aggressive and ambitious as the Apollo moon landing program.
Or the Manhattan Project.
Yeah. We could be doing these things with the money we're spending on this obscenity in Iraq that could change the planet and give so many jobs, millions of jobs. The Apollo Alliance projects 3 million jobs, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's energy, it's health care. I mean, all we have to do is make it profitable. And the way we do that is take away the billions and billions in funding that subsidizes these insider corporations. And I think that can happen that way. We've got to go from just being angry to pulling ourselves up and moving forward, because what I found in working with clients who have come to me because they want to heal themselves, I don't treat them for their illness. I coach them and I counsel them and I teach them how to function at their best and how to move into a space and a way of functioning that is at their best. And when they do that, they leave their symptoms behind. And that's what we can do in America. It's not just, we're not going to get rid of Bush. We're going to hire a president who's got a vision and who's going to take action and do things to make America a place that we can be proud of again, who we can stand up tall and go to another country and feel good about being an American, where we walk there in a foreign in France or in Africa or wherever or in the Middle East, and they go, America does the right thing. You should be proud to be an American. And boy, I was standing in line in Canada waiting to go through a customs with all these people with European passports, and I had my green American passport, and it was like,
Blue, you mean?
No, mine's green.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's an older one. I got to get it replaced.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel great about it. I didn't feel proud to be an American right now. And I want to do that. And we can do that. And I'm sure once the whoever it is that replaces Bush gets in there, we'll start to do that again.
Yeah. What do you see in the various candidates out there? Do you see that kind of positive vision coming through from them? And even perhaps more important than your particular take on it, which I'm curious to hear, what are you hearing from? I know that you get hundreds of emails every day, maybe thousands, from people who read op-ed news, giving you tips for news stories and ideas and feedback on the things that you write. What are you hearing from people?
Well, I've kind of come out that I'm a Kucinich supporter. I've sent money to Kucinich and Dean.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how many people have said, and I've seen it on C-SPAN, too, people who have said, Kucinich is really the guy I like the most, but he can't possibly win, so I'm going to vote. I'm going to settle for someone else and vote for someone else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the funny thing about positive psychology is that 20 or 30 years ago, it didn't exist. All that there was negative pathology-oriented Freudian psychology. Figure out what's wrong with the person. Diagnose the person. There was no discussion of how to move the world, how to move a person towards positive strengths and resources, how to build a person up. You just were there talking about fixing the person. And that's the vision that I love from Kucinich. And you know, he's going to hang in there till the end, I think, because he's not just running for president. He's trying to build an organization that starts to create that vision. His idea of a Department of Peace is a beautiful thing. And when people mock it and they laugh at it, it's kind of stupid. It's so senseless. That why wouldn't we want to have a whole bunch of departments that move this country towards what's best and what's most whole and healthy? We should have a whole collection of departments that move towards the best in this world.
Well, you know, we had the Department of War, and it was called the Department of War from the founding of the country until through the Civil War. I'm frankly not sure when it changed its name to the Department of Defense, but it became the Department of Defense, which sounds certainly more appropriate than the Department of War. We have the Department of Agriculture, which is supposed to protect our food supply, but now we're finding that in the vision of the Bush administration, its main job is to promote the welfare of the largest of the agricultural corporations.
Well, we know that once we get a Democrat into the presidency, there's going to be a lot of unemployment in Washington that's very joyful to know about, because they're going to throw out all these shills who have been working for the corporations.
You really think so? I mean, there were a lot of those shills there when Bill Clinton was around.
Well, that's why we've got to make sure that we hire somebody who's not going to just sell out to the corporations.
Yeah. Do you think John Kerry will do it?
I don't know enough about Kerry yet.
Yeah. It's for that matter, you know, I spent some time on his website the other day trying to figure out exactly what he was suggesting. And it seems to me that perhaps his positions are evolving. We heard a bit of a speech of his on C-SPAN the other day. It sounded pretty good.
Yeah, I heard him back in June. I've seen him live twice, and my first two responses to him were he was very stilted, very frozen face, dead face.
Yeah.
And he's come alive.
Yeah,
and I think that you got to thank Howard Dean for that. Regardless of how Howard Dean ends up doing, he shook up this election and woke everybody up and got them energized. And I hope Curry can do it. I want to believe it. I don't know enough about him. I can't say too much good or bad. I like what he did when he was younger, when he came back from Vietnam. I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah,
and I have every hope that he'll be able to do it. But what I worry about is the compromises that have to be made before going into office, and I just hope it's possible for him to just move forward there and just...
Assuming that it's him. I mean, that may not be a safe assumption. There's still 80%, 90% of the vote to be taken.
Yeah, whoever it is. We were talking the other day about the possibility of a bunch of them pulling together delegates and grabbing it. It's still up for grabs, I think.
Yeah, although, you know, I don't know if you can assign your delegates to somebody else. I think you can only release them, and then they get to choose. But I may be wrong. It may vary on a state-by-state basis. I'm not really sure how that's going to work. But interesting times we live in here. The job situation. You're hearing a lot of people. You know, we just opened the hour with this thing that people, discouraged workers, people just giving up. 400,000 of them now.
I'm hearing a lot of pain. These are not McDonald's workers. These are people who have had good-paying jobs with a lot of training, and they're really hurting.
But even the McDonald's workers are really hurting. I mean, you know, it's not like somebody's pain who earned $100,000 last year should be any greater than somebody's pain to earn $15,000 last year.
Well, you know, I did a piece a week or two ago about how this outsourcing through India and what have you is really smuggling.
Yeah.
They're smuggling jobs into the country. Years ago, I hired...
Oh, that's a great metaphor for it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Years ago, I hired somebody from Russia to do a job for me. It was a programmer. He was living in Novokuznetsk, Siberia. And I had to go through a whole process. I had to get applications from other people for the job, and I had to apply for a visa for him. Well, you know, why don't they have to do that when they put somebody on the other end of a phone and give them a job replacing someone in this country?
There you go. There you go. Great point. We're talking with Rob Call. We're at the Winter Brain Conference. This is Tom Hartman. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
if they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, where our talking points come from Madison and Jefferson, not from right-wing think tanks or the RNC. We're talking with Rob Call, one of those talking points people out there with opednews.com, and also the founder and runner guy, executive
organizer,
there you go, of the Winter Brain Conference and StoryCon. And which you can find out about brainmeeting.com. And what's the website for StoryCon?
StoryCon.org.
StoryCon.org. Great. And Rob, you had some final thoughts here to wrap. Let me acknowledge the folks who showed up in our chat room. Thank you all for showing up and hanging out with us today. Thank Louise for producing this program. Brad Walrod for helping select our music in New York City, and Shar Jones in Detroit for doing such an excellent job of mixing this thing together and engineering the program while we're here on the road. Rama Schneider will be in filling in for me tomorrow as I'm flying home, and I'll be back here on Thursday. But Rama's got a great show set up for you, too. So now, to you, Rob, your thoughts here.
Well, biofeedback is a training process that teaches people how to take control of their lives so they no longer need drugs.
Right.
It's a way to change the way you look at the world, really, because most people are trained to just go to the doctor and get medication.
Right,
to,
and you see that as a metaphor for politics as well.
Yeah, that's the way that's how things usually are. People are used to settling for the way things are. With biofeedback, you've got to make a commitment to change your life. You've got to start on a hero's journey, on an adventure. And really, we're in the middle of one now. And the call of adventure, which is a story concept, is that in November, a monster might come back to bite us all. George Bush. And you have until November 4th.
And we can be the heroes against the monster.
And you can be a hero. But to be that hero, you've got to cross the threshold. And you've got to make a commitment to have a new life.
Yeah.
And you're going to have threshold guardians. But that if you make that commitment, you've got to, the sooner you do it, the better. Because we need every person doing everything they can to change the world so that George Bush doesn't get elected, and so that a progressive vision, so that a vision that treats people better, that treats people with respect, that puts corporations in their place, is built. So make it happen and change your life.
There you go. Excellent words of wisdom from Rob Call, founder of StoryCon, Win a Brain Conference, and opednews.com. Our guest for the last half hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, and I'll be back live on Thursday.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
That Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I want to
different...
see you try the Afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the...